Hello, and welcome to this, another episode of Frame and Reference. I'm your host, Kenny McMillan, and you're listening to episode 133 with Laurent Barrès, DP of Criminal Record. Enjoy. Yeah, I saw that you went to, is it a pretty prestigious film school in, what was it, France? Like, it was a whole cinematography school?
Yeah, the École Lumière, it was specifically for the people making cinematography. There was another section for the photography, but still photography, and another for the sound. But from that school, by example, went out Philippe Rousseau, met a lot of, you know, he won two Oscars, most of the French DOPs. In the past, an American director like Fred Zinnemann did it. Mm. That's very weird. He did it just right after the Civil War. It's quite prestigious, you know. I'm not coming from the family. My family isn't working in the business. I was living in the southwest of France, and you have to pass an exam for entering that school. And it's a national school. It means that you don't pay anything for doing it, but selection is extremely rude, because I remember the first exam, we were something like almost 1,000 or 1,500 people tried to, and that still at the end you are 24. That's the point. So it was pretty difficult. And I fell up the first time. I did it on the second attempt. I was very young. And for me, it was big things, because I have to leave my southwest small town to go in Paris alone. Nobody was, wow. It was a big deal, but it's okay. It's how I did it. So,
yeah.
That was my start. I did it in, I went out in 1988. Yeah. Another century.
What kind of stuff, or what type of person were they looking for back then? Because I imagine these days, especially with the prevalence of, you know, really nice equipment that you can get that's not too expensive, you know, your application, short film or reel or whatever it might be, it could be highly polished. Whereas back in, even when I was in film school, film was the only option unless you wanted to submit something shot on VHS, you know? I just barely asked a question. I was just saying, what kind of person was that school looking for? Like, what got you in that 24?
Basically, this it's very strange, to be honest, because at least when at the end, if I count the people who continue the business, well, maybe 5-6, the other totally disappeared. They went somewhere else. Because I think when you do such a school at that time, it was you have to do, I would say, a classic way. You have to be an intern, second assistant, first assistant, cameraman, DOP, and so on and so on. Now that the deal changed totally, you have a lot of people, or they're arriving on the business, they are immediately DOPs, you know what I mean? Which is sometimes really complicated, because when you start on the subaltern positions, you have time to learn how works are set, what are the people doing. You know, this is the guy who is the prop. This is, you know, you understand how it works. And sometimes I have the feeling that my young colleagues are a little bit confused with it. You know, I'm very attached of my work to the organization of the work, because for me, when you understand the DOP is a very strategic position, you could put a mess for everything or make the things happen very well, you know. And if you don't have that knowledge, if you don't know how to drive the people and organize your team to do that, it could be a total disaster. And for me, it's a very part of the job. For example, in the prep, I'm very close to the first AD for the schedule. It's important to know what we think to do. I think I know basically what he's doing and how he works and how I can help him to do his work. That's the point. But when I did it, it was not like that. I mean, when I did a school, it wasn't like that. People want really to understand how it works and how to do it. And when you make the effort to step inside the industry, you have to do all these steps before becoming a DOP or so. You can do it faster. We did it faster because we have a chance. We knew the first technology revolution, which are the telecinema, you know, the grading changed totally because we were shooting in film, but we made the post-production in numeric. And I have to say that I have been lucky to be in that moment because the generation of DLP before me was pretty reluctant of that. And the open position for young people to step inside and do it. And also it was a time when we started to do a lot of video music, commercials. It was helpful for entering in the job. That's how I started in the beginning.
Yeah, I've noticed that. No, that's fine. That's still, yeah, great. Because trust me, my brain's all over the place anyway. So every time you answer anything or anyone answers, I start taking down notes. Like I want to talk about that and that and that. But I've noticed that a lot of really established EPs today all got started in that kind of 90s, 2000s music video scene that doesn't seem to exist anymore. And I've been wondering, like, for years now, what, what's that new avenue? Or is there not a new avenue? Is it going straight back to, you know, work your way up from assistant or gaffer or whatever?
The problem is, technique is not the finality of the work. You have to work on the storytelling. That's the most important thing. And to be honest, if I regret of my career is I did too much commercials and too much. Because you don't learn to do how to drive a story from the beginning to the end. That's the most important. With my young colleague now, when I have my interns, young assistants, and sister that they read the script, which is more and more difficult because nobody reads anymore. They read the script, we talk about that, and I try to explain to them that read the script, ask you the question of how I have to do that. If I was a DOP or if I was a director, how I'm going to do that? And see how the people on the set try to resolve that question. It's not necessarily the best way to do it, but this is also already an answer. And you are learning for yourself to drive a storytelling. For me now, making the light, making the framing, it's the storytelling, only the storytelling. Of course, we want the most beautiful frames. We want the most beautiful light. This is very important. But basically, to be honest, if after 30 years of work, I'm not able to frame correctly a movie or make light, I have to change myself. I don't know. I have to fight with my grandfather, like a Greg Turi or something different. You know, it's just what is important is to find a way to tell a reader the story, to understand the intention of everybody. But that's another problem. Who have the power on the set? That's another thing. And to drive this from the beginning to the end, that's for me the most important thing. And I'm because it's in the center extremely easy to learn the technology because, as you say, all the tools are not so complicated to have. Anyway, even with your iPhone, you can do a fantastic thing. I'm
sorry, I should not. Okay, sorry.
You can make fantastic things. You can make fantastic movie, but it doesn't tell the story. And I regret why when I watch other things now. There is many shows, many films. Looks like piece of that, piece of this, piece of that, piece of this, but there is no complete view of how it's supposed to be. And when you see the big movies, big success, you talk about Oppenheimer, for example, or many, you can see there is a strong vision of how to do it. It's not making necessarily a great movie, but it makes a movie. You know, it's not make a piece of movies inside. And in my opinion, there is actually a big problem with the school that nobody teach that. Everybody teach the technique, everybody teach story, whatever. Nobody teach that. This is a big, big, big problem, in my opinion. I have a strong and difficult experience with students recently. three, four years ago. I joined that school to help the student to make the movie for the end of the years. And it was extremely complicated for me to try to convince them to work in this. They just want to do, okay, nice, that's very nice. I want to find it because of three. Yeah, it doesn't tell the story. You should be different. No, I want to do it. Okay, do it. That's fine. And also, I think I don't want to feel like an old grumpy people, but I think that people doesn't read enough. Doesn't read enough books, doesn't read enough stories. And they're just saw something and they want to reproduce it, which is sometimes limited. That's why I try to have different source of inspiration, not only in the movies, but also in art. You can see here, but okay. In art, in the photography, you know, I try to, like, when I start a movie, I make real research about new people I don't know, even sometime in the past, sometime they are currently working. But this is, for me, important to have a global vision of the problem. That's the
point. Yeah, it's interesting because I've noticed something similar. Maybe with students, but at least people learning, especially online, there seems to be a very strong attachment to aesthetic and not what it means. Like the other day I saw a post online where this guy was like, hey, do my photographs look cinematic? And I sat there for a second, and they weren't photographs of anything. It looked like a bunch of establishing shots, but I was like, they look nice. You've taken a nice photo, but cinematography is putting images together to tell a story. So it's very difficult to make a cinematic photo. You know, it's a book. You could make a cinematic photo book, maybe,
I'm agreeing.
It's something to do with that, like coloring or whatever. It's harder to have a story.
There is dimension in the movie. It's the editing. Editing, this is the only specific things home to the movie. You know, there is no other half. You can say writing a script could be a book or a play. Making cinematography could be pictures and photography or painting or whatever. But editing, it's the things we specifically hold to the movie. So you have to work for that. You don't have to work for yourself. You have to make all the things working together to create and to give the exact feeling that you want to give for the scenes. That's the most important thing. And I think a lot of people forgot that because you have the feeling that it's just nice frame, nice frame, nice frame, nice frame. But when you link all together, it's a pretty flat, you know, it's nice, but it's flat, you know what I mean? So it's very important for me to create this energy, this rhythm in the way I made the show. For example, it's not necessary to be well framed all the time. Sometimes it's important to be a little bit erratic because it gives the feeling that the character is panicky, you know, Also, there is another question in the movie, which is very important. It's the POV. What is the POV of what we should know? Is the POV of what? Is the POV of the director, of one of the characters, of the viewers, whatever, you know what I mean? And all of these questions are totally linked with the story. If you don't have a strict idea of how you want to tell the story, it doesn't work. I can tell you it doesn't work. Every day you have the feeling you do the fantastic things when you see the complete editing.
Yeah,
something wrong there.
I've said a million times that being an editor or editing stuff, whether it be your own or if you take a job editing, because you know editing software is pretty accessible now, makes you a better DP 100%. Because you know it's on any project, because now you know like what shots you need. I can't tell you how many times when I was younger, but still it applies, where you're on a shoot and they just want to cover the hell out of it, and you're like, I'm telling you, we need 3 of those shots. We don't need 10. You're not going to use these other 8. You know, that's bad math. 7, whatever.
that's why also I try almost every day, to watch a movie from the 40 or sometime a silent movie, because there was so less shooting time, you know, so just a frame, explain everything. Today I was watching a movie about William Wyler for the best years of our life. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment where there was two characters talking. One character is waiting for the bus arriving. He's in town. It's darkness. And they are talking. And we see the bus arriving in reflection of the frame, of a store. And the guy, they told, said, I'm sorry, I have to go because my bus arrived. You see that it goes away and you just stay on the character, which is a bit desperate to stay alone. It's so much interesting that to do this and that and the reverse and that and so on. That is so powerful. That's a very good idea. It's just so simple, extremely nice though. One shot, just a little trick in to show how the remaining character is desperate. That's great. That's the things. That's where I try to catch my inspiration also, you know, to explain to the director. Maybe you can rely this, you know. The problem now, everybody, a lot of directors are afraid of nudity because they are not the only person in charge of the shows. You know, there is executive producer, there is distributor, there is people, there is blah, 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 blah. So then they want to make what I call the shopping for the editing on the set. So they shoot everything that they show there is an alternative to what they want. And it's sometimes it's a little bit frustrating now to say, because the result is a compromise, so to say. I've been lucky for the last show I did. It's called Criminal Record, because to be honest, the people was extremely respectful for that. And they respect what we did on the show, what we did on the set. You know, they don't try over editing or whatever. That was very, very good for that. And to be honest, that's very, I do have the feeling that you really did your job. You know, that's
really nice. Well, I imagine, I've interviewed a couple other people who have shot Apple TV shows, and it seems like they're pretty hands off with, like, they just want to see something well made. They're like, yeah, you have fun. Here's some money.
Very respectful. We have conversation with the producers, of course, with the guy for Apple. We have a conversation even with me, but they're extremely respectful. And that's great.
Yeah.
There is not this stupid conversation say, I don't think there's a world. He need to remodulate. You know, as soon as they're happy. That's it. No story. And we have the conversation in prep. They came to visit us on the set a couple of times, was very friendly. When I did the grading, maybe they have one note, when nothing, you know, really nothing, just can we do something for that? Yes, okay, we needed it for something like 15 seconds to do it. Mm. And that's it. It was great. It was a very, 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 very successful and joyful collaboration. I was very happy. It was very nice.
I we'll get to the show in a minute, but I did want to ask, because you had brought it up a couple times. I think you'd kind of said that they don't really teach it to you in school, and I agree. Being a good leader on set is something you end up having to learn. And I think coming up through the ranks, I did not come up through the ranks. I kind of just stumbled my way into being a DP. And one thing that I feel like I was lucky enough to have happened to me is I took on all these other ventures in my life that put me in leadership roles, and I failed miserably at all of them. So I learned, not quickly, but I learned what makes a bad leader. You know, what things I couldn't get away with, and how people will not want to work with you if you do XYZ. And I was wondering kind of how you run your sets and how you get people on your side and create that collaborative environment where people want to do what you want and don't want to push their narrative.
I'm going to support you first, because I don't think that people are watching your show because of you have to redirect everything. The people watching the show because of the actors in the story. So you have to understand that actors on the set have to be comfortable and happy to come and happy to make the job. That's my first thing. So when I start a job in prep, are always asked to talk with the main artists, just have a quick conversation, how they want to work, whether, you know, sometime, for example, when I work with Donald Sutherland, and I asked him, okay, what I can do for you? He said, when there is a scene face to face, I want to be the second. Okay, so I know that. I organize myself to give you that. You know what I mean? That's the first part. When the actors are happy on the set, it's very nice. Of course, the director. The director has to be happy when he knows and so on. But the prep is important, but you cannot break it. Because making a movie is a process, is a life process, you know? What is your assuring prep is going to happen like this when you're on the set. It's a little bit different. You have to give also for everybody, artists, directors, for yourself also, a small space to change the things. You know what I mean? This is important, that not broken, not a feeling that, oh my God, I'm wrong, but have to do it because I promised to do it, you know? And what I said to the director, I don't want you to leave the set with a frustration. I want you to leave the set with the feeling that you have everything. Of course, sometimes it happens, but to be honest, we try to organize everything for that. With my crew, I try to explain them that. Also, it means that they have to be attentive or what's going on. It's not supposed to be the guy arriving with the call sheet and say, okay, we do that, we set up the camera, that's it, and I'm waiting. So I ask them to be attentive for the rehearsals, to be sure what's going on. So we plan to do that, and suddenly they see that the actors are moving a different way. Instead of being close to the windows, they prefer to move in the middle of the room. So of course you have to adapt it. So this is when we finish that, when we finish the real song, when we know basically where we are, we change our mind or not. Sometimes it's what we plan. We do it. And I give to myself, you know, time for the last shakeup and so on for the actors. I give to myself 10, 15 minutes just to quickly change a little bit of light of face ever, not like something different done. And then we shoot. And when we shoot, when we start, we shoot. You'll be sure to shoot. You cannot make a take and say, oh, sorry, I have to change something. Doesn't work like that. No, I mean, but for the actors, it's terrible because they give you something and you say, no, we have to do it for technical. So what I did is not good. No, it's good. So they don't believe you. When they don't believe you, they start to doubt. When they start to doubt, that's created problem. They are not comfortable. You know what I mean? This is the deal you have to have with the artists. Of course, sometimes you have some problem happens, you don't have some light, blow out, or the camera doesn't work, whatever. So that time. But most of the time, you have to be ready. You have to be with them. You have to be with them. Rhythm, you have to work with them, with the director, of course. That's the point. When what is like this, basically, it's not so bad, but to be comfortable at that moment, you have to make a strong prep, very important, to try to imagine what could happen with the strong scouting. You have to know exactly the place you are. You know, because if there is something wrong and suddenly you're supposed to shoot like this, but they want to shoot on the other side, you have to quickly, you know, okay, if we do that a bit, this is this. But if you discover on that moment, it's going to be a disaster. You need to be very prepared for all the opportunities, all the change, and that's it. So as soon as the people feel that you're on their side, you help them, you welcome them, you are warm with them, you know what they do, you are able to understand all the scenes. Sometimes it's more difficult for me when it's in English, but I can remember the dialogue, the lines, you know, I know because at that time I know that character says that, that's very important. Maybe you can trick in this character said that or try to make some lies, so maybe we can treat this a little bit differently and so on. This is help a lot the actors because they have the feeling that you understand their work, that you work with them and everybody is quite happy with that, you know what I mean? When they start to trust you, when you establish this relationship, it's okay. No problem at all.
Yeah.
Whenever it's like complicated, not complicated, difficult, whatever. It's okay. It's okay. Trust you. It needs to trust you, you know. You have to add. I had made one experience when I was in school. We made an exercise. We did all the position on the set. When I was in front of the camera as an actor. I never suffered so much than that day. It was terrible. It was awful. And when you see yourself on the screen, you say, oh my God, never again. But you have to understand that the artist, they play, there are 20 people looking at them like this. It's extremely, stressful. And you have to make them comfortable for that. It's very important.
Yeah.
This is a lot. This is something we talk with my crew all the time. When I worked in the UK, I have a fantastic crew for that. They are very open minded with this. And this is something very, very, very nice.
Yeah. Well, and to your first point about, you know, the people are here to watch the actors, I will say the reason I started watching Criminal Record was because I'm a big fan of Peter Capaldi. And I heard him do a podcast and he was like, oh, I have a new show. And I was like, ooh. And then I just went and started watching it. And I was like, oh, this show looks good. I should text that guy.
No, Peter is a great artist.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's very, very well with this. I just liked it because he did, when he was young, he did a movie, The Dangerous Relation with Stephen Frears. And they shoot it in Paris. And this is when I was about to finish my school time. And I went for the first time of my life on the set. He was there. But I didn't know him at that time. Nobody knows him. You know what I mean? I didn't remember that. And recently, there was a few months, I was rewatching the movies, and I said, but that's Peter. I was there when he shoot us. That's crazy. That's fantastic. But Peter is a director. You know that he won an Oscar for directing a short movie. He did an Oscar for that. Nobody knows that. He did.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes, you have to know that. So he's a director. He's an actor. And he's extremely famous. I didn't realize how much he was famous because in France, nobody knows Doctor Who.
Mm.
When you're in London, when you walk in the street, everybody knows him. Everybody. It's crazy. It's a legend here, you know? And Peter was somebody where, you know, he's somebody who watched everything. He knows everything. He knows the set. He loves seeing stuff. He catches everything immediately. So if you're wrong with him, you're wrong with him.
Yeah.
You cannot. It's straight. You have to tell him what you want. You have to explain. And in front of him, there was Kirch. Kirch Chimbo was fantastic. A huge of energy. A great actress.
Yeah. You know?
She did Hamlet. Hamlet. She did Hamlet. What she's doing, Lady Macbeth. She's a great actress. And on that show, the meeting went out together, fighting together. It was so easy for us, you know what I mean? That's crazy. That's so good. So it's so enthusiastic. You are just to follow him, to help him, to make the things better as you can. But instead, everything is there. It was in our hands, and they did so beautifully. It was so fantastic to work with them. So easy.
Yeah.
You know.
The one thing that comes to mind immediately about the way you shot the show is you've got what feels like every location in London. Like, it feels like you shot everywhere. And you made all the locations look not only the same in terms of, like, you know, cohesive, but also incredibly natural, whilst you have this, like, kind of soft contrast thing going on everywhere that I really enjoy. And I was wondering kind of what your process was getting those locations to look their best and how you kept that look consistent in so many different places, especially outdoors, unless you were just given, you know, overcast days all day.
So that was one of the first conversation I had with the showrunner, Borupman. He was very attached to show a London that basically nobody shoots. You know, a lot of movie happens in London. You have the touristic spots, you know, all the classic things and so. And we would like to show something a little bit different. So we start to shoot in the east and the southeast of London, which is basically where we were. And we spend during the prep to find the best places for that. But you have to know that shooting in London is also a bit complicated because, you know, to organize the shooting, having, you know, all the circus, the trailers, on. It costs a lot of money. You have to find the place. You have to organize it. So you cannot change like this. In France, it's much more easy. I came from a different way to make a movie. So as in Paris, oh, it's a nice street. Let's shoot that. We don't have the permission. We don't care that you did what's in our doesn't like this, but possible. So when you plan to work there, you have to be very strict in your choice and to be sure that what you choose is a good place. So that was the first thing. When we work with Matt Lane, the location manager, when he have the permission to shoot in the place we want, of course we are scouting with director, but for me it's not enough because when you go with all the crew, you know, you don't have time to just shoot it with this. Because I'm not living in London, during the weekend I was boring, so I was by myself going to the place and I investigated, turn around to find the best angle to go a different time of the day, in the morning, in the afternoon, and sometime in the evening or in the night to see how it's already written or not. And I make a lot of pictures and I organize these pictures on the wall to show to Jim. Maybe we can do that. There is, if you remember at the beginning, you have these things in the football, the phone booth when she talked. And I went there to choose specifically that place because in the background you can see the towers and so on. So, but this is because I spend a lot of time there, walking there. I say, okay, that's a good place. I take a picture. Then I draw on the phone booth. We if we put it there, it could work. We can that. That's for me, it's extremely important to find a way how the actors are moving, where they go from what you see, what is the Bible with the light and so on and so on. We sometimes we shoot some places. There is a conversation between Kirsch and the seller of mobile phone, and we know a little bit is things to put it in the perspective of the street. So you can see, I think it's Kingsland Road. You can see all the street until Canary Wharf. The place, the park where the kids is killing, your house, you know, on the background, you have Old Canary Wharf. So this is very, very, for me, if you don't do that, you don't have the movie. It's ridiculous. You know what I mean? It doesn't work, you know. You're feeling that you shoot there because it was easy to shoot. And the second thing is how to show the things. And the things doesn't have to be too much important, you know. They have to be behind the artist, but not too much. And I found the picture of an English photographer called Dan McTulin, who was a war reporter. And before to be a war reporter, he did a lot of picture in Liverpool, and he was specialized by the, I would say, the derelict places, war tumbles, poor people, and so on. And I was appreciate a lot of this, the way he did it, because you're a little bit, you know, a little bit far away from the location, so you can see, not too close. And he had also a great distance between the people on his pictures and the background. And he, just in one picture, you understand where you are, the situation, what's happening behind, what's going on. You understand. There is a backstory of that. Immediately.
That's the cinematic thing.
That's the cinematic thing. But Don McLean is a great photographer. He's not well known. He should be more, much more. And this picture was a great inspiration for me because it was English, which is important because we are shooting in London, so you know that. And also that distance for the character and so on. And it was really helpful for me. And I really be inspired by this. We never, by example, we never use huge wide angle. I prefer to get back in a bit and make it lenses a bit longer, you know, because the background come back behind there, you see them. And all of this, and also we try to be logic every time to have the same approach for all the location. Even if they are different, you have the feeling that you are in, you know, space, the logical space, you know. Mm-hmm. Everything looks on the same place. Because sometimes when you're seeing a movie, you have a feeling that's, okay, that location, it looks like a sci-fi. This one looks like a Korean movie. It's a bit disturbing. There, when you have that feeling, when you know how to organize your frame, you have a continuity in the storytelling. There is never a break, you know what I mean? There is always the same people living in the same place, and you tell the same story. That's what. And the other thing is, the other challenge were we built in the studio, the interior, the apartment from the tower and so on. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that to look like this is a studio, you know. So I start to create some defaults in the frame to pretend to be realistic and not realistic in the same time. All right. So this is the balance between exterior and studio was very difficult and very interesting to if you see the corridor between the lift and the apartment, it's under the lid, because when you go in that place, sometimes there was a missing bulbs there, missing light there, so make it sort of be grimy, you know, that's create the reality, but it's also a way to make a real, I mean, for me, a real job of cinema. That's my point of it.
Yeah. What, were you shooting, I'm just guessing, but were you shooting on like LF, were you shooting large format?
So then?
Were you shooting full frame or like RELF or what was the camera?
Yeah.
It had that very kind of smooth, or not smooth like plasticky, but just something about, I always subscribe to the idea that full frame cameras don't have an inherent look, but I will say that larger sensors do kind of give a very nice gradient to the image, like even especially on faces, you know, where it's not, the contrast seems to roll off in a much nicer way inherently, you know. Because you can obviously see
that's the point. Yeah, that's a very important. I mean, photogeny, the axis is very important, of course.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of scenes about talking. So you have to be perfect.
Yeah.
To be honest, you have to be perfect on faces. Because otherwise, that's a fucking mess.
Yeah.
It's not possible. You know? And as you notice, Peter doesn't have the same face than Kirsch, but that was totally different. And it was challenging for me to have, you know, to respect them and to have the same light, which was, but it was very interesting because there was not so much compromise. When we did the test, I make a couple of, you know, I tried different direction, different contrast, different diffusion, different way to light it quickly. It was quite interesting to see how you see the character arriving in the way you light it. So sometime I have to make it a little bit different, even the face-to-face, a little bit different out there. Nobody noticed this because the way I hope that the way I lead them was according their character, not according their personality, you know what I mean? And they understood that immediately. It was very funny for me to see when we prep the set for that. When they arrived, Peter goes where he's supposed to be, Kirsch goes where she was supposed to be. They're never confused, you know what I mean? They catch that immediately. That's the thing. You can have the feeling that it works. Your work works because people understand what you want to do, you know what I mean? And there was no discussion about you sure you should like me and you should. There was, they see, oh yeah, I think I should be there. Yes, yes, it's your press. I should be there. Yes, coach, it's your coach. That was so, natural. I say that was very, very, it was a great satisfaction.
And yeah.
You know, the inter satisfaction, you're beyond your frenzy.
Did you, what was your kind of approach to lighting? Were you using a lot of like kind of larger, you know, 8x all over the place? Cause like I said, it has this kind of softness to it while still being very contrast. And I was wondering if you were kind of relying on, you know, just window light coming in oftentimes, or were sources kind of bigger, smaller, a lot of LED?
It's depending. The thing you're shooting in London is not Los Angeles. And in London, you have to wear the Vivaldi days with the four seasons in the same day, you know. It's like overcast, then the sun, then it's raining, then it's overcast, and sometimes it could snow in the evening. That's the point. So sometimes it's a bit complicated. So you have to be creative. We have many locations with windows and so on. So we try to organize a line that it could happen. You know what I mean? It could happen means that you have to protect from the sun, or you have to be ready for the sun. Whatever. That's the first thing. The second thing, when the people are inside, it's the precinct, John's house, Begotti's house, exterior is not important.
Mm.
This is the moment they are inside. You know what I mean? They fight against exterior. When they are in exterior, they are on the scene on the scene crime. They are following a killer. They are investigated. That's different.
Right.
While they are inside, we like to lose a little bit what's going on outside. Except when it's important in the story. We have a couple of moments. For example, with June, when she's home, she sees there was a guy, a person supposed to protect her, but in fact, he's watching her and spying her. That's a problem. It's important to see that. But not so much. My feeling that they are inside, this is the moment they have strong conversation, strong fight between June and her husband, June and Hegarty, or they are thinking about what's going on. You know, that's another dimension of the show. When you make an investigation, your mind is traveling. You make mistakes. You get by because you think this is good, but not you come back. It looks like the movement of camera. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So somebody is thinking, she find an idea. You can tracking. You try it. You have to give an idea that you go inside their mind and you catch what they're thinking, what they do. And that's very important because this is when the viewers, the spectator, are very close to the characters. You know, they understand what's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is extremely important to be in exactly in the same rhythm than the people who's watching the show. And at that time, the rhythm of the camera, the tracking, it's the distance also is very, 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 very strong. That's that was something I really loved. And that's the things we have to see. So sometimes that's in us to them. Let's redo a place with different rhythm of tracking with this, you know, and the editing will be much better. Sometimes you don't know, you have to be careful, not be so sure. But it works. I mean, basically when you start to make an investigation and so on, you have the feeling you're always up. That's fine. That's
fine. I did notice, I seem to have written it here, there is like a really good selection of when to use handheld and when to use support. Because at first I was sitting there thinking like, oh, this whole show's handheld. And then when I started paying attention, I was like, oh, no, it's not. there's plenty of like tripods jib arms or whatever, you know, walk-offs. And just to your point, like it's that's something I always tend to forget because in my head I'm like, it's one or the other for some reason.
You mean a handheld?
Yeah. For some reason in my head, I'm always just like, if you're going to go handheld, it's got to be for like the whole show or it'll be jarring, and it's not.
That's... handheld, it's nice sometimes.
Yeah.
But not every time. So, because a lot of directors think that it's handheld, it's realistic, it's good rhythm, and so on. We agree sometimes it's open, yeah. So I'm sure it's very important to have this. But sometimes it's a bit of cliche, I would say. And I love to mix. And we have a couple of scenes in NL, but not so much. We have one, not so much. Even the steady cam, we don't have a lot of steady cam. We have a couple of steady cams. We are much more on track and on the tripod, you know.
I just thought about this because when I was in film school, they were like, this is when punk rock started and started showing us all these French new wave films. Was that a part of your education? Did you care about that, or was it more punk rock to not do the
about French people?
Yeah. Yeah. I figured.
I was born in one country for me. I know, of course, I feel very well the French cinema. Of course, I did it and I love it. But to be honest, I've always been attracted by the American and English movies. That's the point. And yes, but you know, the new wave style came because the people doesn't have money. So for For example, when they shoot in the cars, they put the actors, they're driving, the camera behind. That's it. We plan totally differently on that. In Team Now Recall, we have a volume with LED screens, and we shoot it there. It was much more comfortable, because also it's economically more reasonable. Because you had in a shoot in London in the night with a car, with a loader and so on, it's just complicated and you don't have time to do the things. It's important. The first thing is slightly need in driving in a car. Imagine if you have to shoot it in real, it will take, I don't know, 10 nights.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Don't worry. I think this is important. This is interesting, Wilson, because I think that when I worked in England, sometimes I did a couple of commercial in America, which is different, but I work with American people in Prague. They're always surprised because they expect some French guy doing, you know, things. But I think in a way I work, and particularly in the way I try to understand the meaning of the show and the undertext and so on, I think this is very French.
Man.
This is very French. We're a civilization of talker. We talk. Everybody talk. Our movie, everybody talks. You don't have. It's impossible. I mean, just a graphic movie doesn't exist in France, except a couple of directors. Just people talking. That's why we're all famous for. But that's important. I know that this is my culture. But when I mix it with the I would say Anglo-Saxon way to do it,
right?
I hope it gives something a little bit different. It gives something a bit original. No, but because you cannot forget where you were born. But it's still being next to me. Also, the French cinema, it's the way to shoot. It's more spontaneous. That's sometimes when I try to organize a set where we talk about it, not blocks people, you know, because sometimes I saw that somewhere in some American movie, particularly when the block. I saw when I was at Focus Pools and I did the commercials, when you have an American movie, say, no, that's it. This is how we shoot it. That's it. End of story. Which is extremely shocking for French, because in French, the director is good. And the other, okay, it's in America is different. Producer is God, and
right.
The people on the set, DOP is extremely important because it drives the show with the first AD. And I was surprised that I saw, for example, Laurent Kasdan on the French. He was not on the set, just arriving from his trailer just to say, motor, let's go shooting and rolling, and that's it. That's good. They go away. And then Owen Reisman set up all the whole set without him. I was, wow. Not usual. The director is over there, so you know, it's very different. I respect deeply the director, of course, but I learned also to talk with the producers, with the scriptwriter. So in America, which are very most of them, the executive producers, so they have an idea how to do the show, and it's very different. And I love to be honest, the mix. I love the mix. And I think when the producer love also my way sometimes to work, because I'm very involved in the storytelling, in the way to tell the story.
Yeah.
That came from, I have a long conversation with Philip Rousseau. I met him in Prague, and he explained me that. I was just about to do a show called Crossing Lines, which is interesting. I learned a lot in Crossing Lines. That's why it was very important for me.
And
with Philip, explain me how it works. I tell him, Philip, I knew you when I have been his focus, not his focus, but his second AD on a couple of commercials. And you do a Robert Redford movie. How you met that? You know, you came from French movies and you find it, you work with Robert Redford. And he explained me how different was it. How he brings his French originality, French different. You know, we use a lot of Chinese ball at the time. It was not so often. So he created that. And then people love that because it was light, it was nice, it was beautiful. So, you know, it brings some. That's high hope. I can sometimes bring on the stats, some little bit different, something different. I'm not a fetishist of the equipment. I don't care. I can do a movie with nothing if it's the story. I can do it with all of the equipment. I have no religion for that. For me, it's I never read my previous equipment list or whatever. I don't care. Every time I start from scratch, because I think that every movie have its own truth. We have to find how to do it, which equipment and organize everything. That's the story of that project. You know,
I always find that these days I'm trying to like, I do a lot of like corporate interview stuff because it pays well. And
yeah, of course. But don't worry, I did it too.
Yeah.
You know, this is important.
But you know, there's definitely like a formula to that lighting, you know, that people tend to like. And just every time I do a new one, I'm always like, all right, how can I bring less equipment to this? How can I get away with like one Kino Flow and like what, you know, one of these like brick lights, you know?
I remember when the Numeric started in France, most of the producers were fantastic. We don't need light anymore.
Yeah. All the line producers are like, thank you. Yeah, just give me one Kino Flow 360 or Sky Panel 360.
Yeah, that's it on the story.
I did see this is absolutely. Oh, I did want to add it. I know you brought up not really caring about gear, but I did want to ask about the lens package on the show, because it, again, I really enjoyed the look of it. It didn't seem more like Signature Primes or something.
It was the Supreme Primes. Yes.
They look great.
It was very great. They are. To be honest, okay, I have to be honest. So I was watching a show called The Crow. Have you seen that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. The Adrian Uncle?
Yeah, and I was extremely, I found the, you know, the relationship with the overexposed light and the characters was fantastic. And I noticed that, and I called my focus pool in England and said, do you know people who did that? Because I would like to know what lens they use. So we make an investigation, and a couple of days after, we commit, so they use the three prints. So, okay, let's try to do it, and we use the, let's check how it works, and we make some tests, and it was fantastic. To be honest, that lens was perfect for Chrono Records, because there was a kind of stylization, you know. It's a style, a little bit cinematic, as you said, but also it keep realistic. Mm. You know, you are in the battery, and I think it was exactly what I was looking for that show, which we don't want to be extremely realistic, just realistic. Realism is a little bit the style of the people who doesn't have to be masked.
Right.
But we want to make the stylations and to tell the story, to bring a strong story inside this realistic place. And the Supremes was, for me, a fantastic, not compromise, it was the real good choice. I was hesitating, to be honest, with the Primo, you know, the Prime. But, okay, that was my first ID. But when I saw the Supremes, okay, let's go on the Supremes, which was also much more easy for people because it's not so big, and sure, because the Primo could be a little massive. And it's okay. For me, it was fantastic. And I was totally convinced by what I saw that. So it's okay.
Yeah. And I also think too, like a lot of, kind of to your point, a lot of that, those rehoused lenses either are too big or too small, which sometimes you do want a small lens, but I think that built-in character was fun for a while, you know, like your what are the K35s or whatever, you know, those are incredibly popular, or even the Cook S4s, obviously. But I think just getting like a very clean image and then hitting it in post with whatever you want to do tends to kind of be the move now.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's too much. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's project dependent, but
sometimes there is so much flair. Is that the actors or some?
Right.
It's a bit too much. That's. I think that people make them feel happy, but they forget that the viewer sometimes is, what's going on there?
Right.
And the whole thing. It's very strange, the movie business, because you spend the time to go, we have a such high technology. The tools are actually extraordinary, you know. And there is always people try to find something
right
in front of the destroyed fiction because they need to do something. Again, for me, it's another way to escape to the storytelling. You know, I mean, you make such a sensation that you have the feeling you're doing your job. No, you make sure you promise tell the story. That's the most important thing, I mean, my opinion.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of interesting because we as filmmakers. There's like two sides of making the movie. There's the side that you feel you need to do or want to do as the artist, you know, when you think, oh, you know, like I said, like K-35's look, it's this look, and you get real attached to this idea that you are going to express your internal monologue with the audience. And then there's the other side of it, which is you're making something for an audience. You know, that some people go to really nice restaurants to have the dish prepared in the chef's way. Most people just go to a regular restaurant because they want, you know, chicken carbonara or whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing is, what exactly is your position in set? That's where is the piece of master? Where is the masterpiece? Is it the movie or is it your the cinematography? That's the point. I feel that cinematography is a part of the masterpiece, of course. You have many, many films. You can see that the work of the DOP is fantastic. He made the show much more big and so on. So that's great. That's what we have to do. That's what we try to do every time. But you're not the only one. You're not the only one. You know, again, nobody is watching a movie because it's nice. The people want to see a movie because they love the story, they love the actors, they love the way the emotion from the movie. And our job is to make the emotion bigger as possible. That's the point. Emotion could be comedy, could be making people laughing. When you make a comedy, your job is to make it funny, not to make it super beautiful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have a client been still on the show, not somebody broke because I was too much black light. You know what I mean?
That's
very important. Very, very important. You have to know where you are. You have to know what is your position on the set. You have a strong position. Basically, you have a strong position on the set because, again, you're in the middle of everything. That's the beginning. And because you're in the middle of the team, of everything, you have to make it acceptable for everybody and to make the show working. That's the point. And then you have different level of making working. You have the basic, or you can heighten your level, your work, and make it more beautiful, more interesting, more emotional. You know, when the things are beautiful and works very well, it's very emotional. It's in conscience. But it's true. That exists.
Yeah. What speaking of the beauty of it, what was the process on the TV show coloring the thing? Did you make that look, that kind of cool, icy blue kind of look in pre-production, or did you kind of find that in the grade later?
No, I never do it. I never change the things. And strongly in post-production for one reason. When the people are working many weeks, many months on the editing, I mean, director, editor, producers, they watch it, they rewatch it, they love that because it works hardly on the frame. It's the when you're arriving on the post-production, the grader, you say, you know what, I'm going to change everything. They never once, because for them, this is the identity of the show. So we have to give the identity of the show on the shooting, on the set. Basically, you have to do, I would say, 80%, 75% of the work on the set. You have to be there. Otherwise, it's a disaster. You will front off many, many discussion, many problems, many fights, you know. That's the point. That's the most important thing. When you make a greeting, people are afraid about the continuity. It's the most easy things to do. Continuity, normally, if you're not a stupid person, you should do it basically on the set. It's not so complicated.
Right.
What you do on the grading, and this is where you have a great colorist or not, it's to make it creed, to make it coherent, just to give a feeling that everything goes easily. And it's everything is in details. It's, you know, the relationship between the actors and the background. As you say, the faces and the blue is already there. It's more green, a little bit there, and you keep it there for all the show. And another thing which is very important, I always say that to the colorist, but greeting is a life thing. When you start, it's a life process. When you start, you do this well, it's clean, you're happy, and then slowly change. And after a couple of days, you have to realize that you are where you want to be, so you have to restart the beginning a little bit to adjust where you want to be. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. And the last thing, which is against the production tendencies sometimes, you have to be there in the room. Whether you have to be in the room with the colorist, because when you have a scream, a different scream on it, it's a different feeling, whatever is the scream. When you watch the scenes, you remember the circumstances when you shoot it. You know that at that time the sun was there, blah 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 blah. So you drive in, say, be careful because of the hand, blah blah blah. And then you earn such a huge time. You save a lot of time for that. It makes it much more comfortable for everybody. And it's, for me, the greeting is very important. I really love that. And you have to establish a strong relationship with your colorist. On that show, I was working on Andrew Daniels, who did All Quiet on the Western Front.
That's a great listen show.
It's a great collaboration, and it was fantastic. We have we enjoyed to work together very well. It was, you know, it was easy. He asked the good questions. He said, "What do you think about that?" The proposition was, all of them was acceptable. Sometimes I said, "Oh, maybe yes, maybe not," but always on the good feeling, on the good way. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you have a core racing down, they tell you something, you say, "Huh? What? No, I don't want this." You know, yeah, but it's more beautiful. No. Andrew is extremely respectful of the storytelling, of what the work's done, and he kept the line. It was great. I spent two times, I think, some scene for time 4 days or something like that, I don't remember. Right. But it was very nice, very, very great and positive experience. I really enjoyed it. At least when we showed the results to Apple, they have just, I tell you, a couple of knots, nothing. So everybody was happy. Done.
Yeah.
That's it.
I assume there.
Andrew is a great colorist. That's a great problem.
I will say I want to at some point have a colorist week or colorist month where I just interview a bunch of like I have Jill Bogdanovich's info, but you know she's very busy. I'm trying to get like a list of colorists that I could interview and just have a bunch of episodes of the podcast with just colorists. He'd be a great one.
You should. Yeah, you should. He's a great person and he's very smart.
I will.
If you want his email.
Yeah, no, please. Yeah, I'll hit him up if you can. But I know, you know, it's a little later for you and I actually have another interview coming up here in a little bit. So I'm going to have to let you go. But yeah, thanks a lot for chatting with me, man. That was very, very interesting and educational.
Thank you. See you soon.
Frame and Reference is an Owlbot production. Produced and edited by me, Kenny McMillan, and distributed by Pro Video Coalition. If you'd like to support the podcast directly, you can go to frameandrefpod.com and follow the link to buy me a coffee. It's always appreciated, and as always, thanks for listening.